Welcome to Tuesday Night Faith Formation. And there are times during the year where we have this wonderful confluence of all kinds of things going on. And so, of course, we have confirmation. And part of confirmation, sometimes we have mentors here. And part of the confirmation thing with mentors very often, or about once a month or so, we have someone come and tell their faith story. And so welcome to all of you who are in confirmation or who are mentors or who are here to just listen to Matt's story. How should I introduce Matt? Let's see. Some of you know him as the father of Elliot and Rebecca. Some of you know him as the husband of Aaron. Some of you know him as a son-in-law of Gates and Diane. We've come to know him as a brother in Christ and a member here at Church of the Cross. And tonight we get to hear his faith story, and it's going to be multimedia presentation. And so without further ado, I invite Matt up, and let's give him a little bit of a welcome.
All right. Thank you, Phil. I might just avoid the coffee. Okay. See? You can't do anything without a phone now. I'm timing myself. See how that goes. Thank you very much, Phil. Right. So, boy, oh boy, oh boy. What a scary thought, standing up here being judged by you little whippersnappers and you little whippersnappers in adult clothes. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedules to be here this evening. Phil, I would say Laura, she's not here. Youth, you had to be here, so meh. You got it. Okay, I'll wrap it up real quick then. So I've been really busy lately, so I hope you guys are all ready for 40 minutes of cat videos like this gem. Listen to the beat. Wow, what happened to that cat? Really, is it okay? How high was that roof? Not a clue. So, I am Matthew Brooke. I was born and raised in Calgary. I have a loving wife and two beautiful children. I'm presently petitioning Merriam-Webster to have sleep-depriving terrors listed as a synonym for children. Still waiting for a response. I've been working in the oil and gas industry as a stress engineer at Pi Engineering for the last 4 years. Not this Pi, this Pi. In a nutshell, I apply science. Yay, science! Where's it go? Do you see a clock? I study these and do this. This is an oil storage tank, just making sure that it's okay under hydrostatic pressure loads to make sure that this doesn't happen, or this doesn't happen. I work and talk with people daily who completely reject the possibility that there is a God. They think that the church, oh, is accountable for a number of heinous acts, both indirectly and directly. If it were up to them, this would happen. That's it. My mind is made up. Don't talk about it anymore. La 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 is what I hear them thinking. It's very common in the workplace, and I'm sure you see it at school too. I see this in my extended family too. At least they respect my choice to believe what I believe. So what do I believe? I believe that God is real. I believe that everything we have and everything that we are is because of Him. I believe that Jesus was born, crucified, and resurrected to save us. I believe that if we act like Jesus did, then the world will be a much brighter and loving place. I believe that if we truly believe in God and love God, then all of this is just going to happen naturally. At least I try to believe all these things, because, well, I'm pot-nerfect. I always find myself thinking about me or I. Why me? What's in it for me? How much of an inconvenience is it for me? Do I have the strength, knowledge, and skills needed? How can I fix this? So how did I get to be this way? This probably sounds pretty common to a bunch of people here. Well, my story is that my life's been relatively easy. I had a privileged childhood. I lived in a nice big house on a dead-end street. There was a big hill, hockey rinks, tennis courts, playground, soccer fields just outside my door. I was a member of the Glencoe Club and Earl Grey Golf Club. I got an allowance. Yeah, cha-ching. I went on family vacations, skied, golfed, played squash and rugby. I didn't have to walk more than 15 blocks from my house to get to my elementary, junior high, or high schools. I was the fastest kid around. Being tall and lanky is a blessing. I was smart and would crush my multiplication tables, science fair projects, and anything else at school. As you can imagine, and as is evident, this made me quite cocky. This made me feel like I could do anything that I wanted to do, all with the power of me and I. This made me feel like the center of the universe. I say all this in past tense, avoiding the truth that much of this is still true about me today. Like I said, I'm pot-nerfect. So considering that extensive justification about why it's so easy for me to think about me, and why am I even here talking to you tonight? I'm here tonight because of one reason. I have an in with our administrator extraordinaire, Diane Fortier, and I can basically do whatever I want. It's good. You were supposed to laugh there. Awesome. So while it's both funny and partly true that I am here because of my mother-in-law, it's not really the whole story. I didn't grow up in a religious family, at least not my immediate family. We would only church it up on the token Christmas and Easter services to make my grandparents happy. I wasn't baptized. I didn't believe in God. I also didn't believe that there wasn't a God. I was on the fence. And while on that fence, I never made an effort to know God. That was until I started dating a girl. A Christian girl. The love of my wife, Erin. I was about 22 at the time. She encouraged me to come with her to church every once in a while. It was nice. We drank some coffee, sang some songs, had some snacks, got to chat with her parents and family friends. It was just nice. I still didn't really believe in God, didn't pray, didn't say the Apostles' Creed, but I was passively learning more about Christianity. And I was also learning that there were a lot of self-sufficient, seemingly I and me people just like me, who did put their faith in God. It was around the time that Erin and I got married that the encouragement to go to church every once in a while turned more into encouragement to go to church every week if we could. I was fine with that. I was enjoying myself after all. More coffee, more snacks, more chatting, more good. Eventually, I found myself listening to the readings, gospel, and sermons more actively. I was reciting the Apostles' Creed, and further down the road, I even went up for communion. Honestly, though, my recital of the Creed and taking of communion were more for me to stick out less like a sore thumb than because I believed in what I was saying or doing. It wasn't until one day, when I talked about the sermon with someone over coffee and snacks, of course, that it became abundantly clear to me that Jesus was all about love. If there was one thing you could say he did, you could say he loved us. Therefore, God loves us. Jesus changed our path and saved all people regardless of our merits, regardless of the Ten Commandments. There were so many things that I had heard in the Old Testament that I just didn't believe, that I just disagreed with, that I just didn't want to accept. Like, why would I want to have faith in a God who wants me to fear him? Why would I want to have faith in a vengeful God? Was there really a Noah's Ark? This was not the aha moment where I suddenly believed in God. But this was the aha moment where believing in God didn't seem like such a stretch. And this was the moment that I had an idea of a God that I would want to believe in. It was baby steps from there. More church, more coffee, more learning, more creeds, more communion. It was starting to sink in, not uncomfortably deep. I wouldn't let it, but I had definitely lowered my guard a bit. Fast forward a wee bit, and we were looking for a new church. Some place closer to home. Some place that speaks to us more. Some place with more young families. We tried out a new church in our neighborhood with no luck. Then we bit the bullet and went to the church where my mother and father-in-law went. The church that my mother-in-law has worked at for ages. Church of the Cross. See, I told you. I was here tonight because of her. Not really, but you get it. So there we were, new church, new pastors, new people, seeing BLAST and all of the activities for kids and the engagement and the learning opportunities that that provided totally blew our minds. Seeing more young families than we were used to was great. We felt like there were many more people that we had stuff in common with that we could relate to on a more personal level, which was fantastic. And then also having total strangers come up and talk to us like they knew us was both weird and nice. I guess that's the side effect of having the administrator, being related to the administrator. But what really stood out to me, and I think to Aaron as well, was the messages given by Pastors Phil and Laura. I found myself really wanting to listen to what was being said. It felt like I was hearing real life examples of God's work and the struggles of good people. After a few Sundays, it was pretty evident that this was going to be our new church. So time went on, not members or anything, still just kind of, I guess, passive in the church, you might call it. But I started to drop more of my guard, lost more of my armor, and I found myself wanting to believe in God. But wait, what? How could I want to believe in God without just believing in God? Does the chicken or the egg come first? How do you know that you want to do something without just going ahead and doing it? What was preventing me? So I don't know. But more time went on again. But this time, there were some key people around me that noticed that maybe I was looking for more than I what I was getting. First, Aaron and I were invited to join the group study series called Starting Point. It was really a great study for anyone curious about Christianity or anyone trying to reignite their faith. It hit the mark. I was left with the familiar notion that God is love and that God loves us unconditionally. I was left with some new friends. I was left with some healthy discussion and wisdom from others that I wouldn't have come up with on my own. I was left actually starting to believe in God. Second, we were again invited to join a group study about the Small Catechism. Let's just say that if I didn't already believe in God at this point, there would have been no way that I would have chosen to study that. Just kidding. Again, it was great to hear Luther's insight, the insight of others in the group, and to just feel part of a community with a common, healthy interest. Third, most recently, probably most importantly or most significant in my recent journey, was that I was sponsored by one of my friends here to go to the men's Anglican Curcio weekend a month ago. I guess this person saw that my faith needed a little refinement or a little developing, or that this person saw that it was about time that I did something with the little faith that I had, or maybe it was both. I don't know. So I went. I learned. I can't tell you too much because it's kind of hush-hush, but so I went. I learned. I ate. I discussed. I was surprised. I learned some more. I ate some more. I was surprised a whole bunch more, and so on. It was an exhausting whirlwind of activity, fellowship, and prayer. Until that weekend, I had never prayed so hard. I had never really tried to listen for God's call. I had never been so trusting of the relative strangers around me. I had never felt so supported by those same strangers. It was a mountaintop weekend for me. That weekend, I knew that God loves me and that I love God. And that's pretty much where I'm at today. To see where we are. And yeah, that's really my story of where I am now. There's obviously a long road ahead of me. I just need to try and, I guess, stay focused on what we want or what I want to do, which is to develop that relationship further. So we'll see how that goes.
We're not going to let you off the hot seat just yet.
Oh, I know. Just rescue me.
I'm just wondering if there's any folks that have any questions about his journey or anything at all. I'm going to go ahead and use the mic.
And I'm an open book.
When you had your children, did it do something special to you?
Ooh. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that life got hard. I thought that life was hard before, but it got really hard. And probably harder for people around me than it did just for me. Yes, it did. I didn't really understand the patience that it requires to really nurture and teach and bear with children at their best or their worst, or I mean, aside from the love I have for my wife, I'd never really kind of seen such a good example, like right there in front of me, of something that you can love unconditionally. So all of these things that you never really thought that you were capable of all start becoming possible as a result of being exposed to those little gifts. And I think that in the long term, being exposed to that and being pushed and growing with them and wanting them to live a healthy, solid life, I guess, in the future, probably helped push me a little bit more towards God, as opposed to further away, of course. Kind of saw all of that as both a logical choice, and I was kind of headed there anyways. Welcome.
I have a question.
Oh.
No, I'll defer to Doug.
Thanks for sharing that story. There are many people here that have a background in science, like yourself.
Yes.
And science really is a black and white world. It's if it's gray, it's only because it hasn't been determined what side it should be on. And when you discuss with your work cohorts and that about spiritual and God and the things associated with that, it's not black or white. It's a matter of faith. It's a matter of belief. And it just doesn't seem to be something you're ever trained in, at least in a academic world. But, you know, from my perspective and how I've come completely convinced that God exists, there is a maker, is that I the more I see of the world, the universe, the infinite things that are happening, there is order. Pastor Beth used to say, without God here, it'd be like a tornado going through a junkyard and creating a 747. Things are the way they are today because of a creator. It had a start. And from a scientific perspective, the more I think of that analogy, the more it's not a matter of convincing. You just know that there is a creator. And through Christ, that creator is channeled into the person, the things that are around us every day. We're not making 747s out of junk anymore. We're dealing with relationships, and we're dealing with things that are hard to understand why they're happening. But through Christ and the examples that are in the Bible, it just makes it so much easier knowing that God does exist, He's there, and that He has influence over us through the Bible, through Christ, to help us do that. But I guess my question is, has that ever thought about having a creator, having the Big Bang, if that's what you call it? It had to start somewhere. It had to happen.
Yeah, that's where the book stops with a lot of people, or at least the people that I speak to. It will go back to, yeah, there was a Big Bang, and kind of that's it. That's the end of the discussion. But my thought is always, well, why was there a Big Bang? If there was this sudden explosion of this massive something, where did that something initially come from before, if there was anything before the Big Bang? None of that makes any sense to me, right? I just think that there is so much stuff out there that we can't explain. We're always learning. We're always finding out that we were wrong before. To say that we've just nailed it down with science, to say that there is no God, I don't think is a valid proof, I guess, of that theory. Especially since when you could easily argue that science is just our interpretation of His rules. I don't know. Chew on that.
I'll go ahead and go with my question then. Actually, it's kind of a follow-up. You talked a lot about how you came with Aaron and the kids to church and kept, and that was a big part of your faith development. Once you started believing and getting to know God as love, did or and or how did things shift in your work life?
Ooh, in my work life.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, if you think about maybe a videotape of your life at work, would there be a difference from 3 years ago to today? I'm just really curious to, as far as either what how it showed up differently or whether your just perspective of what you were doing at work shifted.
I'm cringing while you're asking that question because I know the right answer, but I know the real answer, and no, I still work like a dog. I don't know. I still put certain priorities on top of other priorities that should actually be higher priorities, such as, you know, family and friends, and it's not always healthy. So that's one of the things that I was kind of faced more, or that was that I was forced to look at more clearly a month ago on this Curcio weekend and kind of really identify, like, this is what I think I want to be like, but if somebody else saw me, like that videotape of me at work or whatever, this is what they're gonna see. And there's a complete mismatch between the two. So it was pretty evident at that point that I need to be much more intentional in the way that I do things to try and avoid those nasty habits of just me and I. I can't see if that answered his question because he's gone, but call it solved.
Mm. First of all, as we got all to remember what we had is how we selected the whole congregation to be responsible for that. And really moving in, I thought it was a lot of trying to run the church background because that much of the congregation is accepting the community to be able to support it. It was really moving. We had more of that kind of attitude in the church that we've done. And then secondly,
thank you. You're welcome. Well, do you know how awkward it is to relay a compliment that was directed at me? Okay. Lloyd was saying that he thought it was so fantastic, like the best thing he's ever seen in his life, that I asked the whole congregation to be my baptismal sponsor. The second thing was, he also thinks it's probably the second best thing in his life that that I am brave and not afraid to be open, I guess, when speaking with people in situations like this or during study.
All right, I'm going to speak really loud because you can mic them and we're recording, right? So,
do you?
So if you could...
Thank you.
So your talk is part of a...
Your talk is part of a series that we started called Faith Stories, and then the subtext is in An Evening with Matt Brook, right? So here you are, and this is part of the confirmation program, and what we're trying to do is to demonstrate to young people that people who are older have a journey that might be like the journey that's in front of them. right? So that our faith life as adults, we kind of lay that bare for them, just for them to see that people are real and people have the same sort of struggles that they might have or might not have, but some sort of struggle. So now you're in the position where you could speak to these young people about life. So if you could give them any advice or any word of wisdom about juggling career and family and faith and life, just from your wisdom of what you've experienced, what would you say to them? Is that fair? Yeah,
I think that's fair. For starters, probably the most...
Because it's not hypothetical, they're actually here, right?
Yeah, I know. Young ones, grasshoppers. For starters, probably the most important thing would be to do as I say and not as I do. Because I'm still making a bunch of mistakes. I'm not getting the priorities quite right. Work-life balance is a mess. Once you get into those habits of really starting to try and look out for yourself, I guess, first as number one, it's really, really hard to shake it. It just becomes normal. So the earlier on in your life that you can make more of a focus in your, I guess, daily routine to just let somebody know around you in your family that you love them, or just to help out a random stranger on the street. That could be, I don't know, pick up the thing they dropped, say hi, do whatever, hold the door open. Just those small little acts where you're intentionally kind of going outside of your comfort zone, trying to do something for someone else other than yourself, I think that you'll be much better off in the long run trying to stay in a healthy relationship with that guy. So that's probably the first thing. Should I elaborate?
You may if you want.
What is the other one? I don't know what it's like for you guys at school. Because I wasn't religious when I was in school. We never talked about it. Like, never. So I'm not sure. Maybe you guys can answer this question. Do you find that it's difficult to make friends with other people who also believe in God or share some common beliefs? Is that difficult? Or is it pretty easy?
And this isn't TV, so you actually have to answer the question.
I'm going to say that
are
it's
you trying?
Easy.
Well, and maybe a way to rephrase it is, do you talk about your faith?
Yes. Do you talk about your faith with others at school? Just a simple yes, I do, or not would suffice.
Well, and because there's a couple pastors in the house, we'll twist a little bit. We actually want to pass the mic to you and have you share if you do or you don't, and then why or why not?
Because I'll say straight up front, I'll go first and I'll make it easy. It was probably just the other night. I had my brother, my sister-in-law, and my mom over for dinner, and it came up how I was at this Curcio weekend a month ago. And I kind of didn't like talking about it because I know that they're not really on the same page as I am. So I was probably, I don't know, maybe a little bit embarrassed, I guess, about maybe what they thought it was all about, Maybe they thought I was weird. Maybe they thought I was just different. But I just didn't feel too comfortable, or I wasn't too proud just to say straight up front, like, yeah, it was awesome. I totally, like, felt everything, and it was the best thing ever. I was ashamed to kind of do that, so I don't know. Does that make it easier for anybody to go?
Well, for me, I don't actually, because not many people at my school are actually, like, of this religion, so, like, sometimes it's uncomfortable to talk about that, and maybe, like, it just seems like kind of the wrong place to do it, because some of you are other religions, and then you never really know, but, yeah, that's...
Okay, so when I was in like younger, I went to a Catholic school, and I found it almost harder when I was at that school because there were so many different like rules almost. Because now at the school I go to, although there's not as many people that are religious, they're more accepting because they don't understand it. They just kind of go with it.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I mean, they don't really know what it's all about, so they just, it's part of your life, and they accept that. But I find, like, for example, at my when I went to a Catholic school, we weren't allowed to do communion, so they would do services, and though I was Lutheran and I'd had communion before, I wasn't able to do communion because I wasn't at a certain age. And so it was very different because it was going completely against what I had learned.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I mean, I have a few friends, but it's more just casual talk and less like really going into the topic deeply, I guess.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
At my school, it's not like bring up regularly, but my teacher will sometimes ask a question like, how does this work or how does that work? And someone in my class or me will answer that question, but I don't really talk about my faith that much in school.
Yeah, I mean, I have a few friends who are Lutheran, but it doesn't really come up that often. Sometimes we just like explain to our other friends what confirmation is and stuff, but we don't really have really deep conversations about faith, and I guess sometimes it seems like sort of like church and school is different, and it shouldn't be like that, but like you have like church friends and you have school friends and it doesn't really mix that much.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess sometimes it's about like bringing God into all aspects of your life and not just thinking about it at church.
You guys all gotta have it.
Yeah, so, no, if religion's brought up, sure, I'll talk, but it's never brought up at all, so mm-hmm. if the motivation's not there, why would I talk?
Nobody in my class really knows that I'm Lutheran because I'm the only Lutheran kid in my school because I go to a Catholic school. It's been that way since preschool. And I just go along with their traditions. I don't really ask about the traditions. I just talk to my teacher about it. Occasionally I ask her how this is, because she has a brother who's Lutheran, so she understands it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I just ask her how this would work if it was Lutheran, and she just explains that.
Normally when I'm at my school, they don't really bring it up that much, and when you go to talk about it with anyone, they don't really, no one really understands how it works, so they kind of just like, you have to tell them how it works and you like explain everything to them, and then no one really gets what it means because they can be all different religions. So it's kind of awkward talking to different people because you're not sure.
Yeah.
So I go to a private Christian school, and it's kind of irrelevant because we just have three CE classes, and that's Christian education classes a week. So, and then we have chapels on Wednesdays, and that's really all that we do for like Christianity at our school. And it's like, if it's brought up, yeah, like Isaac, I'll talk about it, but if it isn't, why make the effort? But I still am a pretty strong Christian, and yeah.
I go to just a normal public school. We don't really have a lot of religion there, but mostly the entire school's Mormons, pretty much. But if somebody brings it up, yeah, I'll talk about it, but usually I just keep to myself.
I'm not confirmation, but I'll say something. So I'd say occasionally it comes up just about what activities we're doing after school or something. And I have one other friend in my class who goes to that United Church right next door. But other than that, not really. The one time it probably came up the most was last year. I had a friend in grade 6 when I was in grade 9 on our bus. And she was Muslim, and occasionally we'd have discussions on the bus, more comparing the two religions in general out of interest, but not really into our own personal faith life, I'd say.
So this is a question for you, Matt, but it's also a question for everybody in the room.
Yeah.
So why is it, because confirmands, you just kind of, let's do this. If you could identify with what the confirmands were saying in your own life, relating to other people around you about sharing your faith, would you just raise your hand? If you could identify what the confirmands were saying about how it is for them to share, if you can relate to that, just raise your hand. So it's like everybody in the room, right? So the question is, what is that? Why is it like that for us to share about our faith and to share about what we believe? So first, I want to see, Matt, if you have an answer to that, and then maybe we'll let other people talk about that.
What is that?
Yeah, what is that? Why is it like that? Why is it awkward for you to say that you had an awesome time? And, you know, why is it awkward to share about what you believe with people you work with? Like, why is it awkward to bring it up at school or to bring it up in the grocery store? Mm-hmm. What is that?
Yeah. Well, for starters, I don't think that we would be in the same predicament if it was, I don't know, 40 years ago, when you wouldn't have people asking you, so what is that? Because that was just the thing, right? Like, everybody went to church. It was just a job. It's just like mowing the lawn. You go to church, everybody does it. So I think that now puts us at a disadvantage, because not a lot of people are going to church anymore. Well, less and less and less and less people are going to church. And I also think that it's extremely natural to say, why bother, right? Like, it's really hard to put yourself intentionally in the deep end when you know that everybody's going to be looking at you and possibly judging what you're saying or what you're thinking. So it's scary. I think that's probably it. I think we're just scared.
In my own experience, I think it's just the fear of what other people might say, or the fear of the unknown, and whatever that means, but I think it, sometimes you're not sure how people will respond, or that's, I think, how I would classify it.
For me, I think it's because it's controversial. We don't talk about politics and religion when we get together with the extended family. And it's almost more so in cases where we're both religious. Like when I'm in a room with a brother-in-law that's a fundamentalist, I don't, I'm, the last thing I'll do is bring up the religious talk.
Or let alone say Merry Christmas at work.
I wonder if a lot of the problem is not that when we see people that do talk about their faith, they do not do it in a very positive way for other people.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing that I was going to say first is the church has failed us on this, and I'm a part of the church.
You can't just drop the mic after that.
I think we have not or do not or worked in a way of helping each other to see the natural openings that come to us in conversations and activities. And so we see witnessing or talking about our faith as something that's imposed, instead of something that comes out of the relationship. And when I say this, I also think that it's maybe not as much about talking about our faith as living as a Christian in relation to others.
Totally. I think you're right.
As someone who works in a school, okay, I'm not a student, but I'm a teacher, so I get a different perspective. I think there's a feeling in schools, now there's sort of a two-part to this. As a teacher, I mean, I can't talk about my faith because of my position of authority or whatever as a teacher within the school. But having said that, I think there's a real push within schools to not talk about faith. You know, schools and many staff within schools have worked hard to take faith out of the school in an effort to be more open to all peoples. But ironically, as they do that, they sort of push against people who are of a faith. How I deal with that in my own classroom and when I teach, quietly within my own classroom, when kids want to talk about something related to a church or their faith, I encourage that conversation between myself and the students. I can't talk about my own faith, but I can also encourage them to be true to their faith and encourage them in whatever that means to them. So the kids that are Muslim, the kids that are Christian, whatever background they come from. Yeah, and the only other thing I thought of too, as I was thinking that when we have our door decorating contest at the holiday season, since we can't call it Christmas, one of the things I've done on my classroom door is I've put religious greetings from different faiths. So I'll put Happy Hanukkah, and I'll put, I was asking my Muslim kids, what do I put for Ramadan? What do you say? Happy Ramadan? What do I say? So I was looking for, you know, the greetings that would be associated with whatever high holidays for their faith, and I plastered my door with all of those different things, I guess, to make a faith presence without pushing it on anyone.
This reminds me of when I used to teach in a public school, junior, senior high, and there was a group called Teens Encounter Christ, not in the high school, but in the Anglican Church. And they would have weekends away. And lo and behold, every once in a while, there'd be a student there from my school. I was a teacher librarian, so I really saw everybody because they would come in at some point. And it was so neat to be able to talk to those kids about faith because we'd experienced it together. And I wouldn't be standing in front of the classroom. I would just be having a conversation with someone.
And just to do a little bit of translation, Sheila's talking about tech, Teens Encounter Christ. She's talking about Logos for the young people in the room. That's the same. It's a similar program, Logos, right? So I want to just end this question by sharing something with you. So my younger sister just sent me a text a couple of hours ago. She summarized the sermon that she heard on Sunday, and it goes like this.
There is no problem that Jesus cannot solve. No promise he cannot fulfill, no prayer he cannot answer, no disease he cannot cure, no heart he cannot mend, no relationship he cannot restore, no person he cannot save, no chaos to which he cannot bring peace, no pain he cannot redeem, no sin he cannot forgive, no bondage he cannot break, no need he cannot meet, no enemy he cannot beat, and no mountain that he cannot move. Right? So as we go out into the world and about our daily lives, what do we encounter except people who have problems and broken hearts and broken relationships and chaos in their lives and darkness and hopelessness? And, you know, perhaps the opportunity to witness to people about faith is the opportunity to share about how people don't have to live with the hopelessness and the dead ends that they think are inevitable and permanent, right? So, at least for me, what I've done in my life is to talk about the power of love and friendship and peace. And I talk about the fruit of the Spirit all the time, about love and joy and peace and generosity, and about how those things mend all the ills of the world. What are those things? They're the fruit of God's Spirit. So, you know, it's a good and easy entree, because on the surface it doesn't seem to people like you're talking about God, but you actually are. And then if you live a Christian life and you speak about what the fruit of God's Spirit does in the world without actually talking about God, eventually people ask you, like, how are you living like that? How do you stay like that? And then, well, that's the fruit of God's Spirit, and then here we go, right? I noticed that myself, I'm really hesitant to talk about Jesus, because Jesus' name has been co-opted by people who've used it for other purposes. So I don't start there. I start with things that are more accessible to people, and I let those things lead me to conversations, deeper conversations about being in relationship with Jesus and other things. We're gonna do something, we're gonna shift in a minute, but I wanna give you, Matt, one more opportunity to say something if you'd like to before we shift.
Just give me a moment. There was like a lot of questions and a lot of answers.
Yeah.
I'm not guiding you. I'm not leading you in any way, shape, or form. I'm just trying to put my thoughts on the table, and you can take them if you will. I think that Laura brings up a very good point about these are all of the good things. These are all of the things that hardly anybody has a problem with when we talk about Christianity. It's not like we're talking about the vengeful God. We're not talking about any of these other things. These are all just the bright, shiny, happy pieces of it, which is what I think is truly the essence of it. So those words are great, but again, those go best hand in hand with somebody who can kind of walk that walk, I guess, right? If they see somebody, like I see people around here who are like shining examples of good Christians, and yeah, that makes an impact. That makes you want to know that person. That makes you want to be better yourself. And it was throughout my development in faith, being exposed to more and more people who kind of fit that criteria, that were able to bring me in, I guess, to open me up more willingly. And it didn't start with, these are the hard things, it's not all fire and brimstone. That's not going to help. That's not going to speak to anybody. That's just going to shove people away.
Well, actually, the fire and brimstone, now we're in a dialogue here, but the fire and brimstone, it comes after the redemption and the opening, right? So you actually are facing fire and brimstone now, because when you have the awakening, then you begin to see how you have things in your life that are disjointed and out of order with God's desire for your life and for your days and your moments. And you have to purge things. And it's
often not easy. Like in my case, it was really painful. But I've been toying with the idea with that maybe that's what the wrath is and that's what the fire and brimstone is. It's that personal purging and that. Like, I basically purged myself of 90% of my friends. Because, you know, you can't hang around with people who go to bars and expect that that's going to edify your discipleship. It doesn't mean you can't go to a bar, but if all of your friends are people that only do that and they're not open to anything else and they're ridiculing you, you have to do some sort of purging and surround yourself with people who will support you in that walk so that you can develop and grow. Mm-hmm. And that's not easy. So, you know, it's just a thought. And if you were here for the Islam and jihad talk, that's what the personal jihad is, right? It's the truing yourself up and everything it takes to do that. I have one more comment before we shift as we're beginning to turn the corner. So Curcio is it's a renewal movement and program within the church, and it's designed to renew people's personal faith lives and to renew congregational life. So it's open to everyone. And if you would like to know more about that offline, you can talk to Matt or me or Pastor Phil or Lisa. Actually, there's lots of people in the room who have done that.
I had something written. I didn't put it in, but I was going to say.
Oh,
no, I got this super powerful microphone. Let's make it a game. We're not going to tell you who they are. If you're interested in doing something that's awesome, just go out and talk. You talk to so-and-so and so-and-so, and then eventually you'll find somebody who has gone to Curcio and can tell you all about it. Or just talk to her.
Curcio is actually how I got to be like this, so yeah. Be warned. okay, so to officially make the shift, if you're not sitting with your mentor, confirmands, you need to be sitting with your mentor, next near your mentor.
It was a big slide, Isaac, a whole inch. Do we want more cats while we wait?
Huh? More what?
More cats? Well, you missed the cats.
Yeah, I missed the cats. Okay. Yeah, I missed the beginning. Go ahead.
No, it was embarrassing.
Okay. So with the people that you're sitting near, just have a conversation about what you heard. What was important to you about what you heard? Go.
Thanks for coming.